Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name is Zach, and this week I'm joined by the regular crew. I'm joined by Mark, Logan, and Zoe. Mark, how are you today?
I am doing great. Ready for some action. How are you doing, Logan?
Oh, I have plotted and I have planned. The time of adventure is now. Zoe?
I'm ready.
The vibration coming through.
I am jittering with excitement.
Yes.
Zach, are you, can you see me? I'm phasing through realities.
Yeah, you're cutting in and out, but like I can still hear you and everything. So, I mean, I guess we'll just keep going.
Indeed.
This week, we're going to be playing some more 7th Sea. In our campaign of Myth and Legacies. Logan's continuing his time in the GM seat here. So, Logan, hey.
Hi.
Buddy. Hello. Keep the seat warm for the next person. You're taking your sweet time. Hey, but that's fine. I'm plenty fine with a long story.
You know, you true. Said get it warm, and I'm just planning to burn the seat down. So, you know.
Oh, God.
Okay, we just bought a new seat, like, 3 weeks ago.
This is why we can't have nice things. I understand.
You are why we can't have nice things.
I am.
And you can't burn just one seat. You have to burn the whole set so we can get the whole thing.
Yeah, right. You
know, keep it matched.
Yeah, it's hard to match. So that way, like, we have to get rid of another seat so we have, like, two of new seats. It's just a weird, it's a really really weird ratio there.
Yep. That little kid that smiles really wickedly while there's a burning house behind her. That is me now.
Yes.
Awesome.
So, welcome. Hi, hello. Last time we left our amazing heroes, there was some interesting developments. It was a very interpersonal episode. Lots of development of character and background, and I would say relationships in some ways, and remembering old relationships, and when we left our people, we had an interesting interaction with Briggs and the lady he had saved. That young lady's mother had passed away, and Briggs kind of was confronted with that. At that same time, Electo was also confronted by Mark's character, Andreas, and that long history they've had back and forth in the fighting, kind of stopping the fighting between the two of them by being like, hey, come join our crew. And with that, any other major notes you feel like are important to highlight before we jump in?
Andreas got to see his daughter.
Yeah.
Another major point.
Who thinks the world of him?
Yeah. The king. The king basically conscripting Andreas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's more big bads out there that. But basically, you should go listen to the other episodes because.
Yeah, go listen to the other episode. Don't take our word for it.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. There are groups coming in. There's armies that are amassing, or navies that are amassing, and moving towards Numa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm on the edge of the seat, Logan.
Well, let's get started with this. Keep it going.
Don't stop there.
In the time of peace, one can find reconciliation and rejuvenation. But the time of peace has passed.
We see our camera kind of looming over the whole island of Numa. And Numa is a scattering of islands, but it's considered kind of like one unit. I would say there are probably, seven or eight main land masses. And from there, we can see the camera scans far over towards the east to the city of Iskandar, where we see onion top roofs and different caracals and small dinghy boats that are worrying about much larger what we would almost think of as like galleons and brigs and brigandine ships, but they have a more sleek and angular sort of shape. The sails are cocked at a diagonal angle. Very different style than what we're used to seeing from Theia. And loading onto that, we see a lot of the caracals are trying to attach ropes to try and start towing these ships out of port. And we're seeing workers carrying boxes and, you know, units of eight troops in full armor, full weapons, getting loaded onto the ships as well. All of the troops are in some form of like scale mail, and they have also a conical style of helmet that spirals up into a spike. And we can tell that this isn't just local military getting loaded on. These are Marines getting loaded onto a Navy. And we're seeing a hubbub of activity and buzz of motion happening. From there, the camera kind of split fades to another dock that is a little more south, as we see the light change, more equatorial, more bright, and not only just the sun coming down, but the reflection off of the sands around this port. We see a bunch of buildings that have kind of a squared shape with a flat top. Some of those flat tops have like chairs and little coverings and awnings and stuff. Like people sit up on top of their roofs to enjoy the evenings or enjoy some time. But around this port, not only are the buildings different shapes, more squat, more earth tone, but there is a lot more people on foot moving lots and lots and lots of boxes. It's almost like a slave workforce, as most of the people have chains around their necks, and there is a long main pier coming off of the smaller piers, or coming off the middle of where the smaller piers are. And along that main pier, we see row upon row upon row of chained persons holding on to ropes and hauling a boat towards the open sea. We see, basically, this is a small port area, Benben Setim. This is one of the few intercoastal lakes in the Ubari Desert of Kemet. And we see them pulling these boats along, and as the boats get to a certain point, somebody on the ship drops the lines. It almost pulls some of the people into the water as this heavy weight drops to the ground, and their effort they are putting in just releases. There's nothing resisting them, and they pull that line up, and they're running down the pier to try and connect it to another, you know, ship. And just more and more ships are being launched from Kemet. Again, as the camera kind of pans back, and we see the number of ships being pulled out, a cloud passes across the front of our camera. And we're seeing over the Widow's Sea, we see a line of boats passing around the point of La Motte in Montaigne, kind of the southernmost island of Montaigne. And these have a very classic square rigged shape, very almost crescent-shaped boat, if the back of the crescent was down in the water, and multiple levels and cannons sticking out of it, and we can see the Avalonian Grawl is on one of the sails, and we just see a line of ships. And as we scan past them, already in motion down through the Widow's Sea, heading towards the Numenari approach, we're seeing more ships getting loaded up in Montaigne. And we're seeing them at Rayuri and Rogna. In just every port, we're seeing things getting loaded up. And we're going to go from this massive view, this outward view of everything that's surrounding Numa, and bring us right back into the Amazonian camp, where Andreas and Alecto were having a conversation, where Andreas's daughter and mother of his child are off preparing some sort of food in an open air sort of area around the tents and the traveling kind of almost Vardo of Amazons that are near Tyrion right now. They're out there prepping some food, but there's a little bit of space, 20 feet or so, and Alecto and Andreas were engaged in a very strong conversation, but a din of quiet and shock, dare I say, has fallen over the two of them.
Yeah, that's about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Andreas has a little bit of a, I can't believe I said that, but I did. And I stick by it. So there.
That's okay. Alecto has, I can't believe he just said that, look on her face.
Uh-huh.
And I think she's just in too much shock to really give you any kind of response other than opening and closing her mouth several times, standing with her arms folded over her chest, and then, you know, one hand on her hip, and just kind of processing what you've said to her. And then finally, I think she reaches up her hand and pinches between the bridge of her nose tightly and just says, "Ochi, no. No, I'm not going to join you."
"Why? You need a spot. You need a fight."
"I need a fight."
"You need a goal. We have a goal. We have a family. That is what you want. There is a place for you."
"Andreas, I'm not going with you."
"Okay."
I think the camera gets a really close-up look of her face. And Andreas, if your notice is high enough, you might actually catch this. There is just the briefest flash of fear across her eyes. And she stiffens, huffs out a breath, and says, "I can't face that again. No. No, I won't go with you. No." And then she just walks away, like, absolutely upset by what has just transpired. Grabs Zippos and just bolts. To the displeasure of, I'm gonna forget her name.
Sophia.
Coralina? Sophia?
Karina.
Karina, that's what
Karina is the daughter.
That's the daughter,
Sophia,
yeah.
Sophia is the, yeah.
Yeah, much to the displeasure of Karina, who wanted to hug Auntie a little bit more. Yeah, no, she's not okay.
We see Sophia calm her daughter and pull her in, and then there is a look up from Sophia as Karina is kind of crying in mother's skirts, so to speak, you know, leaning against mom's leg.
"I'm sorry.
And
I'm sorry, baby."
We see Sophia look up with also a certain sadness on her face. And then it goes away. Just, I mean, a split second. What is Andreas doing right now?
Darn good question.
Okay. With that, let's scan down to the dock real quick. Give you a second to think about it.
Yeah.
Down to the dock. We see Briggs. We had just left you talking with the lady you had saved, the young lady whose mother had passed away just recently from consumption and the effects therein. And, there's that haunted look, I would imagine, on Briggs' face. He knows he did the right thing, right? Right?
I mean, yeah.
Right?
Of course he believes he did the right thing. I hate the lack of the GM talking right now.
I hate the silence.
Just a little tickle at the back of your neck, the feeling of it, the memory of him trying to influence you, trying to influence her. But you walk into town, into up the docks, and what were you looking for up at the docks here? I remember you were going for something to look at something. Was it, were you trying to mess with the ATC some more? I think they had, their patrols had calmed down, which is why you feel safe to walk around.
Yeah, I think I was just going to kind of get an idea of how their activity was around town, seeing if it's, you know, safe enough to go into town for an extended period of time, stuff like that.
Okay.
Because he's been on the ship for the last maybe week.
This is a risk. Things seem calmer for you now, where you feel like you can do this, but it's not like everything's safe. How would you approach the risk of this gathering information and looking about town?
Oh, wow. He'd probably be doing the thing that he normally does and probably sticking to smaller alleyways and stuff like that if he can.
Okay.
And
sounds like general sneakiness.
Yeah, general sneakiness. Yeah, I just want to get an eye of things without being too obvious about it.
Okay. So in your mind, is that being a hide? Is that being maybe theft? Is that more focused on noticing things and you think that your stealth will be fine?
I might go with more of a notice.
Okay.
Because even if I get seen, I have ways of probably getting out of things.
That's right.
So
always trust the get out of jail free card.
Right, exactly. So I might go with more of a wits notice here.
Perfect. First roll, first time rolling. And nobody else is around to really help you out, which you, of course, can spend a hero point for your own benefit. We should all be up for everybody to have your starting hero points, as usual.
Yes, yes.
And I believe, Briggs, you have an extra one.
I do have two. Flare die?
Flare die, yep. First hand die, all that.
I'm rolling some dice here.
Bones.
Roll bones. Oh, tens, baby. Come on.
Come on now.
I have 5 raises with 1 extra.
I will buy that extra because I need more danger.
No.
I'll take another hero point.
Fantastic. Okay, so I've got, for you, I've got 2 consequences that you're trying to sneak past. I've got 3 opportunities that you're trying to learn, or 2 opportunities, and then you're successful in finding information, so you can, of course, ask me questions.
Of course.
So, 2 consequences, 2 opportunities, and the rest.
Well, if it's a 1-for-1, I can take both those opportunities.
Okay.
And hopefully pass both of those consequences.
Sure.
I've got 1
Unless
extra.
You want to dig deeper on those, finding out the opportunity is like, okay, cool, you know this thing. Do you want to dig into that more? Do you want to know more about it? Would be kind of the thing.
Okay. All right. I'll see how this plays out. Yeah?
Okay. So first up, we'll spend one
for... spend as I go here?
Sure. So what's first?
I just kind of want to get an idea of what they're still doing around here.
Okay.
If they, because the ATC. It's been about a week or so, maybe, and they're still here. So why?
Yep.
Kind of thing.
So you notice that the ATC ship you thought that hadn't moved is actually a different ship now, in the exact same spot, and it's the exact same type of brigantine ship. Looks like it was made far to the north. So probably straight from Vespin, but it has a different name on it. This one says the Jolly Crusader. It's the same orientation, same, spot on the pier. And it feels like it's been doing the same sort of stuff as far as like, looks like it's loading stuff on and off. And you also notice that this isn't the only ATC ship. It's just the only one that is brandishing the ATC symbols on the ship, on the flags, etc. There's another one that you recognize from your own time of having to deal with them, where it's one of those that usually tries to stay undercover in some fashion or another. But you remember the name being the Skilled Monkey. The Skilled Monkey, name of the ship. And it usually and just...
That's one that's also here?
Yep. It's a few different, spots down the pier. It's not right next to it. And it's smaller than this one. But it's hauled all kinds of cargo, munitions, people. Yeah. It's one of those that is definitely ATC, and you thought you had heard that it had sunk at one point in time, but you don't know how long ago that was now that you think of it.
I might get a bit closer to the pier area here.
For this other ship?
Uh-huh. A little further down the docks.
Okay.
Just kind of take a look-see. At a distance.
I would say, how close would be my first question.
Not walking up by the boat, of course. Maybe a good 400 feet.
Okay.
300 feet, something. A solid distance.
Enough you can see some details, not be noticed, not be walking right by it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't really see much activity on it. There's a couple people, of course, doing some small things and keeping watch on the ship itself. However, yeah, fuck it, you're a sailor. I'll let you notice this. There is a slight shifting to the boat as if there are people walking around below decks. And it does seem to be sitting a little lower than you would think a newly arrived boat should. It's sitting a little lower
in the water. Like it's heavy.
Yep.
And there are people, like a decent amount of people, it seems like, underneath.
There's a couple, or... there's a couple people on the, you know, in the open air on top of the deck, but you don't see inside the ship. I mean, it's solid ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you need a minute? Should we pop back over to somebody else?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to pop over to Electo.
F.
Where do we see Electo and Epos traveling to?
I think... All right, so I think she rides back to her abode, right? Her house.
Sure.
Which isn't fancy by any means. It's very, very minimalist. You know, it's a single, like, maybe, like, 320 square foot little hut. You know, and then, like, the stable. Like, the stable is bigger than the friggin' house.
Of course.
and she dismounts pretty hastily and walks in, takes off her head wrappings, kind of chucks them over at the meager hay bed, and like stands over the small table that encompasses pretty much the entire center of the room, and is talking to herself. But also Epos has his head in the window, so she's talking to Epos too. She's like, I don't understand why he would ask me to come with him after everything that... Haven't I been angry enough? Wouldn't it have set in at some point? She's looking at Epos for confirmation, and Epos just, like, shrugs his big shoulders. He's chewing on a bit of hay. It's like, I know, I feel like if I was angry enough, he would just leave. He would just go. I don't know, A family? Really? That's what he thinks I want? What do you think, Epos? And Epos just stares at her, like, stops mid-chew. Like, pins his ears back and shakes his head and just continues to to eat hay. He's like, oh, I'm not answering that. If it's okay with you, GM.
Yeah.
I think she gets a visitor at this point.
Ooh.
And Epos notices the visitor before she does.
Okay.
And Epos is not perturbed by the visitor at all.
And who is this visitor we see walking in?
This visitor is Raza.
Ooh, okay. Interesting.
He and Electo have been pretty much talking, I think, almost every day, just about things. It originally had started like, oh, we're going to talk about the Red Hand, and we're going to talk about all the stuff that had to lead up to that. And then led to, let's talk about Andreas, and let's talk about you. And then it led into, well, let's talk about Raza, and let's talk about Electo. Like, let's actually just have fun conversations. Like, she actually made a friend in Raza, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And they have coffee every day. I think he just kind of knocks on the door, but after hearing Electo talking to Epos, he feels it's safe to just like poke his head in.
Hello. I do not mean to be rude. Are you decent?
No.
Hello.
This is perfect timing. Come in and sit down, please.
Okay. And there's like a little rattle as he's like carrying something.
What did
and,
you bring?
Door
it was
opens
my
up
turn. Raza, it was my turn to make the coffee.
You were gone earlier, and so I just I did the thing.
All right. Put it down, please.
Okay.
You set the coffee down, and she has like little tapas, like of course olives, of course.
Of course.
She's got an olive orchard,
right?
And some feta, and some you know pita bread, and you know olive oil, and all that kind of stuff. And instead of talking to Epo, she's now talking to Raza. It's like, I don't understand. Is he thick in the head? Did he get hit by the mast or something?
And
I don't
as he
understand.
Starts to open his mouth to say something, he's like, well, and then you're already continuing to talk the next statement.
Yes.
And he just, as we see this back and forth, Raza just ends up like fixing coffee for each of you and just kind of listening.
It's like, I don't understand. He asked me to join you. Did you know that?
Huh. It took him long enough.
What do you mean by that statement?
The Capitan, he's impulsive. He's quite the impetuous hero type, and seems to make a sense.
Impulsive is the correct word I would use.
Please, he is a great mind, but he gets bored. He's not one to sit there and mastermind everything. That is Briggs.
He said that I was looking for a fight and that I needed family. And
it's
not
at that
wrong.
Time when you say a fight that specifically Raza brings up the cup and is like looking over the rim as he's sipping to try and use the cup to stop him from saying anything.
It's just like,
No, you're not looking for a fight. What?
No. And yes, I want to stop the Red Hand, of course. And they're gone, by the way. I've done as much searching as I can, and they appear to have just given up the ghost, as it were.
Interesting.
There's no sign of them anywhere. And that woman. And Alecto gets quiet.
Here, drink your coffee.
She stares at the coffee cup for a bit and then is reminded that, oh, hey, you can drink this. picks it up and drinks it and takes a deep breath and looks at Raza. What do you think? Do you think it would be better if I came along? I can't do much here if the Red Hand have truly left Numa. I don't know.
It is hard to say. The captain seems to be worried about, well, what the king had talked to him about. It is becoming increasingly apparent that there is something moving towards Numa, and the king is worried. And so I bet that Andreas is also worried. I will not tell you what you must do. Please. You cannot put me in that position. But
it's
you will be missed if you do not come, and Epos will hate you if you do. I mean, he is of course welcome.
I would not go anywhere without Epos.
How is he on the water? Have you had him on a boat?
Not that I am aware of.
Hmm.
You said he walked up on the boat to find you? How was he then?
I don't remember seeing him walking up. When I found him, he was already on our boat. And him and the Capitan were in the stairs of death, looking each other down.
She looks over at Epos. Did you win? And Epos, like, glares at her and pins his ears all the way back and huffs out of breath. He's like, he didn't win. It was a stalemate. She laughs.
I'm actually going to use that as a moment to transition here on this conversation over to Andreas.
That sounds good.
Where we're having the vision of Epos remembering that stare down and that anger that he has in his face. And we fade in from Epos's face to Andreas's face. Also having an angry look on his face, his, you know, eyebrows probably pierced or clenched together as he's just thinking about something. Who knows? Maybe he's still frustrated. But we're going to come back to Andreas now at the Amazon camp, just having been left by Alecto once again.
Yeah, probably still just kind of staring off in the direction that she went.
Okay.
You know, once again, you know, it's like, I don't understand people. Eventually, I guess he'll turn back to Karina and Sophia. You said they were fixing a meal, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I will kind of slowly, tentatively kind of come back, you know, not barging in, but
sure.
Kind of slowly, kind of almost hands up and surrender type of approach.
Okay.
I mean you no harm.
Yes, exactly. Just kind of spend some more time getting stories from Karina and, you know, just letting her do the 4-year-old ramble or 5-year-old, you know, just.
I think we've established she's five. Yeah, she's five.
Five, that's right. Yeah. So, yeah, just letting her tell me anything and everything and absorbing it all with just with fascination. And kind of keeping an eye on Sophia as well, just to get an idea of, you know, not wanting to overstay my welcome either. You know, just giving some more time to just absorb what I can of Karina's life.
Okay.
And, yeah, just doing that, you know, until things start to feel a little weird, at which point, I will, kind of stand up and I'm sorry, but you know, I am a captain of a ship and my ship is desperate for repairs and I must return to her, but I will be back before I go. And if your mother allows, you are welcome to, and I'll be looking at addressing this to Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
You are welcome to come visit the ship as well.
Can I, Mama? Can I? I can bring him hummus that I make.
Okay. Maybe we'll talk about that.
All right. Well, I will see you soon, Karina.
And she comes over and, like, as you're standing up, like, does the whole 5-year-old charge and, like, wrap around your leg and, like, all of that heart melt moment.
Yes.
And then as soon as that embrace is done, she, like, runs back and, like, grabs something to play with, you know, so it's as much, like, this flood of, like, I'll miss you and why are you leaving to, oh, look, toy.
Yes.
Typical 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I will look at Sophia and thank you. I appreciate this very, very much.
And she nods her head and she doesn't seem to want to say anything, but the twist of frustration that you've been seeing on her face seems to not be there right now.
Okay.
So
yeah,
if nothing else, this is good. This is you know, a calming situation.
It's not bad. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. And with that I will kind of take the long meandering path back to the ship. Kind of walking slowly, collecting my thoughts, just kind of wallowing in the images of Karina and taking my time to get back to the ship.
Before we get into that reverie walk, as you're walking out of camp, you do overhear some other Amazonia talking, and you hear one say, "How long do you think we're going to be here? It has been weeks already." And the other one's like, "Well, if the rumors are true, Queen Artemisia and Licinius might actually be getting married." "What? Don't even say that." "Oh, yes, I've heard that." And then you continue on with your walk, but a little bit of the rumor engine going on there of things happening.
Huh. Okay.
Taking a long walk, are you trying to stop by anybody's, you know, orchards or anything? Just taking a scenic walk through the
kind of a scenic walk. You know, I think I actually might cut through the orchards, where we had our assuming it's kind of on the way. I might just kind of cut through the orchards where we had our little bow contest.
Okay,
early on.
Well, that'll be fun here in just a minute. So let's pass over to Briggs then, who is in investigation mode. Mr. Briggs, what do you want to do next? Having, you know, gotten a closer look at this quote-unquote unmarked ATC vessel.
You made everything else so juicy. I wasn't thinking about what I was going to do.
The real problem, the story. Yeah. Would you like a minute to think about that? Okay, let's distract you with all of these other things that are happening right now that you don't want to miss out on.
Right. You said I had some opportunities.
You've spent on one, which is finding out about the change in ships and the additional ship. You have another opportunity. Wonderful. That is in the area. And then there are some consequences you're trying to bow out of, potentially.
I might take that other opportunity.
Okay.
And just get... Yeah, I mean, I'm in recon mode. I'm not in take action mode right now. So
sure.
He's just kind of seeing what's happening, and then he'll kind of assess the situation, I guess.
Okay. You are watching this ship from where?
From more in the city, so a little closer in towards the city buildings and such.
Yep.
He might try and blend in with the crowd and stuff like that, but...
Okay, so more ground level, not like you're, like, Assassin's Creed up the side of a tower to look down on it sort of a thing.
No, I'm staying more inconspicuous, so...
Okay.
Any opportunity that somebody sees somebody on a rooftop probably is very conspicuous.
Oh, sure, 100%, especially in the middle of the day. Well, you being inconspicuous, unfortunately for those who have been following you, you notice someone 30, 40 feet ahead of you kind of make a street gesture, which to most would look like they're adjusting their like hood and mantle sort of thing, like they're kind of shifting. But you can tell there's like hand gesture with the shift that doesn't make any sense for what the person would be doing. It's one of those, if you know the thieves can't, if you know the language of the street, it is obvious. And if you don't, it blends in. And you realize they're not signaling to you, they're signaling to someone behind you. And you take a peek back, and then you kind of put two and two together that while you are watching the ship, you are also being watched by no one associated with the ATC.
At that moment, I will probably head into the city in hopes to then kind of double back towards the ship.
Okay. So you want to spend on trying to make sure you can shake ship. this tail?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I will. So I think I might that might require an additional raise there to do.
Okay. Perfect. With that, you get around the city. These people are no longer following you. And because you spent two raises on that, you come up to the edge of a cross street and just barely hear on the other side of it, "All right, boys, he's coming. Stand ground, keep armed." And you can hear the creak of well-polished leather and the movement of muskets as you think there are some soldier types waiting on just around the corner.
I will, at this point, spend one of my hero points, activate my boots.
Okay.
Because they will be active for the remainder of the scene.
Okay.
And now he's probably going to try to get some height advantage and make his way up.
Are you trying to avoid a building? The guards? Is that the intent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the intent. I kind of, you know, if I hear that they're coming, I'm gonna the 5 Ds: dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge.
You said dodge twice.
Oh, the dodge. Cool. I'm gonna spend.
If anyone knows the reference, I love you forever.
I'm gonna spend a danger point to as you get up, you see the guards are. They are leveled up to, you know, taking a knee and two standing. Muskets are leveled and waiting as if you're about to get hit by some sort of firing line as soon as you came around that corner. And then you hear a little kid down the street go, "Look, mommy, a flying man."
God damn.
What?
God damn.
Oh, my God. The JoJo thing where it's like you look up and you see the guy and then it like cuts over with the little arrow to be continued.
Yeah, well, fair. To be continued.
To be continued.
To Electo and to Raza.
Oh my God.
Damn it.
Yep. And we see, I think Raza. We hear Raza saying, "It's just something to consider. Do not feel the obligation to have to do the thing. You're just, you are welcome to join us. And that is good because the Capitan is not in, he's not irritated with you. Yes? Well, he is irritated. Never mind. There is opportunity for, would you like to come with us? How about if I ask you, is it better that way?"
Nobody can really see it, but Electo blushes a little bit and turns her face away as if she's surveying the meager amount of stuff that she has to really solidify that while she has been here, she has not made a life for herself. It's really just been, I'm just going to call this place home, hard quotations, until, you know, I can get the fuck out and go back actual home. Right. And she kind of goes a little quiet and turns around and looks at Raza and says, I think Andreas is right. I don't have much here other than spite. And that's no way to live. Ippos, what do you think? She looks over at the horse, and the horse already has his saddle on, already has his saddlebags ready.
I mean, it's not strapped, but they're on his back.
They're on his back. Yep. She's like, do you have a stable on your ship?
No. But I am sure in this refit we can make something happen with the ship. We just have to talk to Dugald and to the Capitan. And we see Ippos's head snap over to the side and ears flatten back. And if, you know, a horse could start growling, the lips would curl and there would be that. But, you know, that's a little too feline for Ippos. But
I mean, they can growl. It's a terrible noise. It's just their teeth grinding together.
Okay, yeah, so kind of that.
And champing, yeah. Champing. Ugh. Okay, all right. Electo is immediately alerted and grabs her bow and her quiver and so what, runs out the door.
And his sword is out in very Razzle's hand. Holy shit. I know who I am. No, I'm not. Okay, so he's following you out, and outside you can see a sharp-looking, olive-skinned young man pulling his horse behind him. This is Andreas walking through your orchard.
Oh. Electo almost drops the bow as like a, oh, it's just you. But I think she holds on to it. She doesn't immediately draw it and knock it, but
yeah,
she does hold on to it and kind of lessens a little bit and puts her hand on Ippos' neck. It's like, I know. It's, don't worry.
Oh, Capitan, hello.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get so close. I was just passing. I'm on my way back to the ship. I didn't mean to disturb anything. I'm, please, excuse me.
Would you like cafe, Capitan?
No, thank you. I appreciate the offer, but...
Andreas. Come inside, please.
Kind of looks at Raza for just a second and nods. Okay.
Ippos, be nice.
Ties off his horse and follows you.
Ippos tries to, like, nip at your hands. Not the horse, just your hands where you're tying off the horse.
Fair enough.
No figs for a week. Don't look at me in that tone of voice.
And Raza, yeah, pours for another cup, and we're gonna fade over back to Briggs again, since you're in the middle
the
of
lonely
some shit,
man, the lonely man in the party. Like, everybody else is having coffee, and I'm stuck over here having to fight ATC.
You're
assholes.
Stuck over here getting Assassin's Creed'd by
an actual, like, you know, heroic adventure type.
My stealth destroyed by a small child.
Yeah, yes.
So we're gonna fade right back in. You had just a quick second to, like, oh crap, and look back and see the kid pointing at you. What do you do immediately?
I continue up the building and proceed to hop across rooftops.
Okay. So we see you kind of, like, kick and push off the air a couple of steps, grab the edge of a building and kind of slide along, get a couple running steps, jump, and you float a little longer than you should. You land and hit and roll, and next building you kind of run and jump and off the side of one building and kind of climb up a little bit more. And we just see a very floaty, almost wire foo level of Assassin's Creed. And you move a couple buildings over as we see that the ATC have their little foreman of guards. There is a guard sergeant who is right behind them who had a sword drawn. And we see them just waiting and waiting and waiting. And the guard sergeant kind of looked around and looked up. It's as if the kid pointed it out to the crowd. And maybe there's some sort of legend that might be building up, or, you know, some kid's story, maybe just fascinated one child. And the guards didn't notice. They were a little too preoccupied with their plan. And you get away from them and from that area. You can travel across the roofs and keep your boots going as long as you want to. However, it is the middle of the day, and the further you go, there is more chances of you being noticed.
That's fine. Can I spend a hero point to make that child start a legend about a flying man in Tyrion?
Oh my god.
Okay. All right.
I love that.
Yeah. So tell us about the legend of the flying man of Tyrion. What is the story that is heard in a bar a week from now?
The story going around is there is a man or creature out there flying around top of buildings, middle of the day, middle of the night. It's been seen at all times.
And what crazy thing does this guy do? Is he even human?
Oh, some say he's not.
Does he have wings?
Yeah. How do they say he flies?
Some don't know, but it's like he creates stairways where he goes.
Oh, that's cool.
We hear, you know, one old Numenari sailors saying, oh, he's got the wings on his ankles like the great gods once he used to. Another's like, you know, it's some Aizen, you know, old buccaneer type says something along of, no, he's more 999, he makes stairs in the air. I've seen it. It's steps and steps and steps. And it's just this revolving story that's going around, and you're hearing it from almost like the twist of each person's experiences as well as the society they came from, putting a little spin on the flying man of Tyrion.
Tis a true legend.
True legend. True legend. You heard it here.
You heard it here first.
With that, we're going to pop back to the orchard.
I think if I may, there's a montage. There's some music playing and Electo's just standing there while Raza and Andreas are sitting there sipping coffee and every once in a while, like eating an olive or whatever. And eventually it's this long story where it cuts over and the end of it is like, Andreas, you were right. And if you'll have me, Endipos, I'll go with you.
Oh. Good. Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. Electo, when we had our games in the forest, in the orchard here, you bested me. But I showed you then. We are Numa. Together we are strong. What gives me my strength are Raza, my crew, my friends. Together we are strong. You can be strong with us. You are welcome. Look forward to you being part of the crew.
You're going to have to make a stable for Epos.
Well, of course. For wait, Epos?
Yes, Epos is coming too.
It's okay. I already talked to Dugal. It's fine. We make it happen.
Is that a problem?
And we hear the sound of hooves outside as we hear a couple other horses riding up to the edge of this, giving the captain a quick cutaway where he doesn't have to, you know, finish that sentence. Epos looks back over his shoulder and there is the, you know, alertedness, but not really much concern as we see outside a couple of guards sliding off of their horses. They look like Kingsguard. And
oh boy, what do they want now?
Yeah, I'll be rushing out to greet them.
I think she steps out and she's like, I already paid my land taxes. What do you want?
What is the situation?
Sorry to bother. The situation is that on the northern parts of our approach, we have a small fight breaking out between the Avalonian escort vessels and Montane fleets. We also hear that there is a landfall on Lac Diamond. We're not sure from whom. The king has requested your counsel at his war room at the mayor's estate.
Okay.
You'll come with us?
I will. I will turn to Raza and Electo. Please, join me. And I will go with the guards.
All right. She mounts Epos and brings her hand down to Raza and is like, it will be a much nicer ride this time, I promise.
He looks at the horse, realizes it's Epos, and goes, well, and gets up on the horse. Just takes him a second. He's a little concerned. And seems to hold on for dear life.
Oh, oh God, not so tight. I need to breathe, Raza. Oh,
please, do forgive.
We'll go at a, and she leans down over to Epos, a slow canter, okay? It's like looks him in the eyes, like we're gonna go slow, all right?
I want to say Epos like starts out
Epos
with a
fucking takes
jolt,
off.
And then slows down, but you know, just enough of a jolt that we hear a very unmasculine squeaky sound from Raza.
Oh, I love that. The horse is my fucking wingman. I love it.
Serious though.
Oh man.
Oh. And with that, we see horses being escorted by Kingsguard towards the main part of the city. We see Briggs. You were traipsing through the town, and there's a legend about the flying man that is being worked on. Has not been told about, but it's coming, and. You touch back down. We see you walking back towards the ship at one point. And as you're getting to the ship, you see a group of Kingsguard who are calling out to talk with the current commanding officer for the Theonis Kleos. And Dugald is, you know, shouting back in his most polite sort of, what the fuck do you want? And he can't hear them for anything. And that's when you're walking up. And Dugald sees you walking up. And he's like, hey, first mate, they want something with the commander.
Aye, Dugald. Shite. What seems to be the issue here, gentlemen?
We are looking for Andreas. Ladies. Or whoever is acting captain for Theonis Kleos.
There's war council being called. Can you respond for the ship?
He'll look at them. He'll look at Dugald. Look at them again. To gold, you're relieved.
Great, thank you!
And he goes back to doing whatever he's doing.
Yes, I can stand in for the time being. He seems to be away from the ship.
Great. Come with us, huh?
Aye.
And with that, we're going to fade out for this episode, as we will come back with the war council.
Very clever use of direction there, GM. There's a war council happening. We need the captain to be there. Finds the captain at the place. Cool. Need the other players there, too.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I can deal with split groups a fair amount. I feel like I'm better at that than most, but at some point, you just gotta be like, no.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
We gotta railroad you. Come on, get back in your pen.
yes, you cats. I know you're cats, but turn it into one fucking room in the house,
come
okay?
On. If I grab the laser pointer, will you all run into the room, okay?
Right. Seriously.
That is fair.
Awesome.
No, only two of them do. I'm sorry. Well, that's, like you said, I think that'll do it for this episode. I'm looking forward to the continuation of this. where this goes and let the story ramp up a bit. So, Logan, thank you for running us through this this adventure here. And, yeah, we'll pick it up next time.
Next time.